I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. On Saturday, all eyes will be on the Pimlico Racetrack for the 142nd running of the Preakness Stakes. As the sports world bends its gaze to the aging track in Northwest Baltimore, track owners and local leaders are considering the future of Pimlico. Almost everyone agrees that the track needs an upgrade. Will it take a facelift or a complete teardown and rebuild to assure that the second leg of the Triple Crown stays in Charm City? Or will the Preakness move to Laurel? What's at stake with the Preakness Stakes? Sandy Rosenberg, who represents Baltimore City in the House of Delegates, and WIPR reporter Karen Hostler join me to talk ponies and politics. Then, theater critic J. Wynn Russick stops by with a review of Crowns, the gospel musical at Baltimore's Arena Players. Midday bolts out of the gate right after the news.
American Pharoah's got a two-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
American Pharoah, the last horse to win the Triple Crown, crossing the finish line in the 2015 Belmont Stakes. Today we're going to examine the future of the Pimlico Racetrack here on Midday. Welcome to the program, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. The 142nd running of the Preakness Stakes takes place Saturday afternoon, and as the infield fills with revelers and the stands become the best place for people and hat watching in town, decisions loom for the aging track, located in a neighborhood that is plagued by crime and more than 2,000 vacant buildings. I'm joined this afternoon on the phone by 41st District Delegate Sandy Rosenberg, who represents the city, including Park Heights, where the track is located. Delegate, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be with you. I'm getting over my goosebumps after hearing that call of the race.
You know, the tradition of horse racing is strong, and it is quite something every time you hear it. Never gets old, does it? With me here in the studio, WIPR's Karen Hostler, who has covered the ponies for many a year. Karen, good to see you.
Good to be here.
So, listeners, what do you think we should do about Pimlico? Tear it down and start over? Should we give it a facelift, or, as some would suggest, close it and move the second leg of the Triple Crown elsewhere, probably Laurel, which is owned by the same company? You can call us and get in on our conversation about horse racing and the horse racing industry in Maryland, Pimlico Racetrack in particular. 410-662-8780 is our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org. And if you want to send us a tweet, you can find us at Midday Tom Hall. So, Karen, let me start with you. You were just back from the track. You were there this morning for the Alibi Breakfast. Tell us a little bit about the history of the Alibi Breakfast.
Well,
I love this.
They've been there's a tradition of, I don't know, something like 60, 70, 80 years where the owners and trainers and connections, as they call it, to the horses who are entered in the Preakness come and they have breakfast and sort of toot their horn, kind of. You know, that's where the alibi comes from. So,
but don't they all say how they're not going to win and you don't have to worry about them? And they
well,
kind of
yes, yes.
Dumb down expectations.
It's it wasn't actually. I must say, it is in the times that I've been there. It has been. They talk about there being BS. Well, that's not really. They're actually quite upbeat. Everybody's charged. And I will say, particularly, we in Maryland at Preakness, we kind of always are in our heart rooting for the guy who won the Derby because, you know, you want to see a Triple Crown. But this year in particular, the Derby winner, Always Dreaming, his peeps were there. He has quite a collection of people from Brooklyn, families and friends and longtime people. And his trainer, Todd Pletcher, is a longtime guy. So the enthusiasm was really strong for, you know, the potential of another win. Although everybody, you know, it's a joy to be there. Joy to do it.
Yeah. And Delegate Rosenberg, I mean, you know, we've got this horse from Brooklyn of all places, you know, Always Dreaming.
I have some very good friends from Brooklyn.
Yeah. any of them horses?
No, they're all human beings, you know. And nor are they horsemen or women.
Yeah. I mean, the mood of the track, certainly during Preakness Week, is very upbeat. As Karen says, people are excited about the race, are excited about the tradition. How would you assess the current mood in the legislature, in the city, and with the owners of Pimlico and Laurel at this point as we look forward and think about the future of that racetrack, which seems to be, you know, certainly very much up in the air?
Well, I think the consensus is it's time to make a decision. That's why we asked the Stadium Authority to conduct the study. That study was funded by the city, by the state, and the biggest amount from the racetrack. The first phase of the study was made public this past winter, and everybody was told the second phase, which will deal with what would the cost be to knock down the track and start from scratch, and then also to look at the financing. There hasn't been much talk about financing yet because everybody's waiting for this phase two to come about. We seem to be stalled at the moment that in terms of the stadium authorities not moving forward with regard to what is the scope of the study and then making the city and the state and the racetrack again live up to their commitments to fund that second phase of the study. If that's done by the end of December, by the end of this calendar year, that's enough time, if the will is there, for us to, I would hope and expect, to decide how we are going to finance a 21st century facility at Pimlico Racetrack and keep the Preakness here.
That still seems like it would be kind of down to the wire, though, wouldn't it, Delegate? I mean, if the study doesn't get finished till December and the session begins in January, I mean, it's not going to
get people a whole lot of time. Well, that's why it's important that we get the study underway, and not have the delay that is the case at this moment. I wrote the chair of the Racing Commission and the Secretary of Labor Licensing and Regulation yesterday, because they're the ones who take, you know, have a vote and take the action to move it forward, and they said, no, we can't do anything. The Secretary of Labor, both, and the chair of the Racing Commission said to me, we're waiting on the Stadium Authority. We can't do anything until they come to us with the scope of study.
And the Stadium Authority told me that they can't do it. They can't start this phase two. On how much is it going to cost to totally rebuild and make the other changes until they get some guidance from the what we call the three partners here, the state.
They asked for that guidance?
They tell me that's what they're waiting
for. I have my
doubts,
and I'm not the only person who has doubts about the Stadium Authority sitting on its hands right now.
Well, in any case, I mean, I think it's clear that if these three partners are going to come together, the mayor, the governor, and the track owners, you know, they got to do it soon, and they've got to make
right.
some serious decisions. And what people told me was that they expected that this kind of serious talk would begin after the Preakness. So we'll see. I mean, it's interesting.
You're right. You don't need a study for there to be serious talk among the three parties.
And which direction you're going to take, and how are you going to finance it?
Right.
There's, you know, many.
I mean, obviously,
but the failure to move forward on the part of the Stadium Authority is not a good sign.
The Stadium Authority isn't even elected. I mean, I guess I...
And to what do you attribute that, Delegate? I mean, why are they dragging their feet?
They're appointed by the governor. I've had meetings with Mr. Kelso, but in recent months he has not returned my emails.
And the governor came out just Tuesday in an interview in the Baltimore Sun in which he expressed support for keeping the race at Pimlico and doing something. He was pretty vague about what, but doing something to have the state be a partner in some sort of renovation or rebuild. I mean, how do you read the governor's passion for this project?
I'm very appreciative of the governor's statement. We now need to follow through, and we can do both. We should do both things. They aren't contrary to – one is not contrary to the other. That is the study being set in motion and having discussions among the interested parties as that study is underway.
I think that I've heard it described to the three players as sort of like poker players. You know, they're keeping their cards
sure.
really close to the vest because, you know, they all know that the city has got to come up with some money, the state has got to come up with some money or means of financing, the track owners, of course. So they don't want to tip their hands until they get an idea of what the other guys thinking, and that's sort of dance that's going on.
All right. I mean, these negotiations aren't public meetings.
No.
Yeah, you know that from covering Annapolis.
I'm not even sure they're meeting, period.
Well, they need, right, you're right, they need to meet. But, I mean, the track is in conversations that we've had during this past session. They've acknowledged that they need to make a commitment. And they've spoken in broad terms about the nature of the financial commitment that they think they could make. Again, this is all part of the poker game.
Exactly.
The mayor has been very forthright, Mayor Pugh, in terms of the issue, the needs that she sees the city is addressing. And the governor has made it. He said we need to talk about what would be the appropriate state level of state support. But he said it should stay in Baltimore. Previously, he had said it should stay in Maryland. So that's
so positive. He's zeroing in. Yeah, I mean, but I'm not so sure, Karen, as I read the reporting on this, that the owners of the track are keeping their cards all that close to the vest, which is to say they seem to really be making a pretty strong case for moving the race to Laurel.
They have
already put millions of dollars into improving Laurel. They consider that the headquarters of Maryland Racing.
Right.
And when they think about a Preakness taking place at Laurel, they say it's a more upscale track. It's a headier audience. It's closer to Washington. There's a Mark station right there. I mean, there are amenities that Laurel has that that Pimlico will never have. And it seems to me that they're being very careful to keep the possibility of moving it to Laurel front and center with everybody's thinking.
That's more the dance. I mean, there is the problem that you technically can't move the Preakness to Laurel without the General Assembly approval. I mean,
And Delegate Rosenberg explained that. There is actually a law on the books that says the Preakness has to be at Pimlico. How's that going to work in terms of this dance, as we say?
Well, it means that for the race to move, you must pass a bill. The track, the jockey club must get 24 votes in the Senate and 71 members in the House to pass a bill that would remove that requirement that the race be run at Pimlico.
And right now, there's how many votes for that, Sandy? Zero?
Well, my sense of things is nobody wants to take this. No, none of my colleagues sees this as something that should be taken away from the city. Now, the cost to do so is an important factor. And, you know, that's part of the negotiations, but it is a very important priority for the mayor, and that becomes a part of the discussion.
I think that there is a good possibility that, I mean, the Mayor Pugh and Larry Hogan, Governor Hogan, seem to have a good working relationship. There's sort of a positive vibe going on there that I think, you know, may contribute in a positive way. And she is very enthusiastic, of course, about if we redo Pimlico, we don't just have it run, you know, 12 racing days a year and sit empty like it does now. She wants to have all kind of other activities, concerts and major events where you could have, 1,000 or 2,000 people that don't even exist in Baltimore now. And, you know, getting people out, she's all enthusiastic about this and is wants to use some of the city gets some slots money, Park Heights does and so forth, to help it, you know, deal with the strain of putting up with the Preakness. And so there are opportunities there.
And the track owners, Delegate Rosenberg, estimate, this is before the study, that caveat is certainly important, that it could cost as much as $500 million to tear what's there now down and build from scratch, whereas a renovation, some sort of facelift, would be in the perhaps $250 to $300 million range. I mean, what's the tipping point? If it's somewhere between $300 and $500 million, is there a place where people say, well, if we're going to spend that much, we might as well just go whole hog and tear the thing down and start from scratch? Or is there really a cap that the governor and the mayor are going to have to impose?
Well, there's a discussion about, you know, who's paying how much, what percentage for the facility itself within the fence on Maryland Jockey Club property, that's going to be a partnership, everyone assumes, between the Jockey Club and the state. And what goes on, the renovation to the community, that's going to be a partnership between the city and the state. And I'm sure that $500 is not a low ball figure that the track put out.
Could be worse, right?
The $500 million.
$500 million. That is not a low ball figure. I mean, I'm not in construction, so, but they have that as $175 million more than renovation. It's all poker at this point.
Exactly.
We got to take a little break. Delegate Sandy Rosenberg joins us, as well as WIPR's Karen Hostler. And after a quick break, we're going to have more on the future of Pimlico in this Preakness Week edition of Midday. You are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. If you want to follow us on Twitter, @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday here on your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Does this mean victory in the Belmont Stakes in the Triple Crown, Seattle Slip?
Well, we don't know. If it's going on, Howard will have to foresee that.
So it's a stirring victory for Seattle Slip, another interesting race.
Howard Cosell, a Preakness memory from 1977. Seattle Slough won the Preakness on his way to a Triple Crown. Seattle Slough, one of only 12 horses to win a Triple Crown. And after Seattle Slough, it was a 38-year drought before we had another Triple Crown winner, American Pharoah, who won the Preakness less than a month after the violence and uprising that ripped through Baltimore streets in 2015, went on to win the Triple Crown. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the future of the Pimlico Racetrack. It's once again going to be the focus of the horse racing world on Saturday when the 142nd running of the Preakness Stakes takes place at what's come to be affectionately known as Old Hilltop. WIPR reporter Karen Hostler was at the track this morning as Preakness Week marches towards the big day of racing on Saturday. She joins me here in Studio A, and joining us on the phone is Delegate Sandy Rosenberg. He represents Park Heights and other parts of the city in the Maryland House of Delegates. He's a staunch advocate of keeping Pimlico alive and keeping the Preakness here in Baltimore at Pimlico. How about you? Is keeping the Preakness in Baltimore important to you? You can join our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org, to follow us on Twitter, @MiddayTomHall. So, Delegate, the track owners and anybody who's paying attention constantly point to the fact that the crime rate and the dilapidation of so many of the buildings in Park Heights around the race course is astonishing. I mean, it's one of the highest crime rates in the city. It's 14% higher than many other areas of the city. There's one estimate that says it's 234% more crime than the average American city. During the mayoral campaign, I interviewed all 13 people running on the Democratic primary for mayor, and every single one of them said, if I'm mayor, when we have development, a place like Port Covington or a place like Harbor East or a place like Hamden or Remington, we're going to demand that the developers give something to the community, not just the part that they're developing. What do you think the chances are of that happening if development is, you know, if there is a development plan that's concocted to either renovate or rebuild the Preakness? What will the impact on the neighborhood likely be?
Well, one of the things that the community has asked of the track is that there be preference incentives to hire people from the neighborhood for the construction jobs. And that's something that is being done now for the 21st Century School program, and the track has said yes, they're fine with that. There are many serious issues in the Park Heights community. Absolutely, we need to address them. But more than 120,000 people voted with their feet last May and came to the race, and they're expecting a similar crowd so this year. So that is a problem that we all need to address. But the report, the first phase of the report for the Stadium Authority said this site, the Pimlico site, is not a hindrance to having redevelopment of the facility and continuing to run the Preakness where it's always been run.
And the 140 plus thousand people last year was a record in 2016. Karen, what's your guess, and what are they saying up at the track about what they expect this week?
Well, I haven't heard estimates about that, but just being at the track and seeing all the tents and all the things that they put up, they are expecting a lot of people.
A few years ago, they disallowed bringing in your own
booze. Yes, yes.
There were a lot of people who thought that was going to be the death knell of the Preakness at the college
and it did cut down the audience a bit, but it had reached a terrible proportion where, you know, kids were jumping from toilets to toilets, the porta potties on the, it was very dangerous. Now, I mean, they can go. They can still buy alcohol inside at the track, but they can't bring it in, and that has some control. And you know, the infield. It's interesting. That's a big problem that the track owners, they desperately want to rebuild the facility, start from scratch, so they can put skyboxes on the top. You know, for better views, you get more money. You know, businesses come and rent out the skyboxes and so forth. That's just not possible unless they rebuild the whole thing. So that's part of where.
And Delegate, before we go to the phones, there's two things. Number one is the fact that this tradition of the Preakness, which goes back to the 19th century, is so strong. Is that enough of a political argument? And how does one make a political argument in terms of allocation of resources when we've got Sonia Sonalesis at the Baltimore City Schools laying off 300 people in a city where public education has been lacking, to say the least, for many years, when you've got, you know, these really, really systemic problems of inequality and lack of opportunity. These folks who run and own these racetracks are saying, I need $1,000 skyboxes to make my business profitable. And they seem to be using the standard of profitability to be that of the Kentucky Derby.
Kentucky Derby makes.
Yeah,
that's their complaint.
But how do we make? I talk to a lot of community activists who know that there are really serious problems in places like Park Heights, in places like the Gilmore mm-hmm. Homes, in places like East Baltimore. How do we justify hundreds of millions of dollars for a place that's used 12 days a year? They're kind of like the M&T Bank Stadium, which is used, you know, maybe 20 times a year if we're lucky. How do we justify that kind of expenditure, given the problems that we need to address?
Well, this would be a capital investment. It's not operating budget, which is the serious issue that the state faces. We're hopefully going to expand the school construction program in the city beyond the first phase of that. It would not be used for just 12 days a year if it's renovated. When I met with Tim Ritvo earlier this month, he talked about having two meets.
And he's the COO of the Stronach Group, owns the racetrack.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about something that benefits not just Park Heights, not just Northwest Baltimore, but the entire region from the benefits that we have, most notably from Preakness Week in terms of economic development, tourism, and all the benefits that come with that. This is not a situation where if we lose the race, as we did with the Colts, that 12 years later, a team's going to move here from another city. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, once it's gone, isn't it?
Correct.
Let's go to the phones. Gino in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Delegate Sandy Rosenberg and reporter Karen Hostler.
Thank you for taking my call. Listen, as a lifelong Baltimorean and a small business person, the Preakness staying in Baltimore, not going to Laurel, is so important to me. I want to make a couple of quick points. If anyone's ever gone out to the Preakness or that weekend, if you want to see the pride, the happiness, the families, the humanity of that community, you go at that time. I mean, they love seeing their neighborhood come fully alive and be embraced by all of Baltimore and all of the region and people from out of the state on Preakness weekend. And the delegate is 100% right. This is a capital investment. And if you improve Pimlico in the right way, you'll have music festivals, you'll have conferences, you'll have a whole assortment of activities that will bring what the neighborhood experiences on Preakness weekend there all the time. And as Baltimore communities pushing out that way are starting to flourish, and there's no reason that Park Heights can't benefit. Last point I want to make is I think this is an opportune time, and at the risk of sounding politically naive, but it's an opportune time for Baltimore County and Baltimore City to work together. The vast majority of the people that will be in those skyboxes and in those party tents this weekend come from Green Spring Valley. We have one of the greatest horse traditions right here in this state. Baltimore County should step up, work with the city, so instead of four parties, you have two, and I think you'll start to see some progress. But the mayor should reach out to Baltimore County, and they certainly have an interest in this, and the most important people in the county, the loudest voices, will say, yes, we want to keep the Preakness right where it is.
All right, well, thanks for the call, Gino. I mean, Delegate, regionalism has been something that's been, you know, certainly on the back burner of everybody's thinking. It tends to pop up during elections. We've got an election coming up in 2018. What's the incentive for Kevin Kamenetz and the people on the Baltimore County Council to get involved in this?
Well, there's a major horse industry in Baltimore County. I'm going to be at Timonium for the sale, the horse sale, along with Bob Manfuso. I'm there as a spectator, not as a purchaser, on Tuesday. So there are hotels in Baltimore County that benefit. So this, as I said, I certainly agree with Gino, and as I said just before he called, this is a regional, the Preakness is of benefits of the region, not just one neighborhood, not just the city. So we welcome that.
And Karen Hosser, when we talk about developing the site, the Pimlico, to be used for stuff other than just a few races a year, I know David Cordish, the developer, was thinking about buying it a few years ago. But what are some of the other ideas for alternative uses of the site?
Well, I think he had some of the same ideas. I mean, hotels and retail, basically. But I think Gino was his call is just exactly what the mayor wants to hear. I mean, that just makes total sense to me. The worst thing they could possibly do is just leave that hulking beast deserted up there in the middle of Park Heights. I mean, that would be disaster for the community. So almost anything they do is going to be better than mm-hmm. that.
Let's go to the phones again. James in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Delegate Rosenberg and Karen Hosler. Hey, James, are you there? Well, let me go to Delegate Rosenberg. You were at a community meeting, I think, just a couple of nights ago. Are there people who have any concerns about a renovation of Pimlico? And is there overwhelming consensus that this would be a good thing up there, or are you getting any pushback?
No, I haven't gotten any neighborhood pushback. I mean, I think the Mount Washington and Glen communities want to make sure that when assuming the track stays and is made into a 21st century facility, that the additional activities are consistent with the nature of the residential neighborhoods that surround the track, and all the other Silburn and Levendale neighborhoods share that concern. I think that is something that can clearly be addressed and resolved as part of a rebuild, but the neighborhoods clearly want a 21st century Pimlico, and they want the Preakness to stay there where it belongs.
Let's try James one more time. I think he's got a question about gambling, and if we can't get to James, then I'm going to ask it myself. But James, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Just like a couple questions. One, was there ever a thought to combine the casino downtown and the Pimlico races, and is there any consideration to combine it in the area that it is? Because I think it would be a really attractive area, and maybe putting something like a community center or a rec center up in the Park Heights area, because, granted, if we build something new there and how the community looks, it's going to be like an eyesore, even though there are some local organizations, some Jewish organizations there that are trying to rebirth the community there, which I think is a good thing. But I thought maybe in an area where we're used to tourism coming in the downtown area near the stadiums in 295. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, James. I mean, Delegate Rosenberg, the connection between the gambling industry and the horse industry is close. I mean, legalized gambling passed in 2008, and if I have my facts right, it's about 7% of the revenue from gambling goes to subsidize purses and stuff for the industry.
6% purses and 1% rebuilding, renovation.
I mean, any thought of expanding gambling out of Pimlico as part of a rebuild?
Well, no, because the communities don't want to have slots at Pimlico. But there is, as you said, this very close relationship financially, because in the neighborhood of $75 million for purses and $25 million for, give or take, for construction are going from the slots tables to the racing industry now. So that is a potential source of financing, you know, a new building, to financing all the renovation or rebuilding that we're talking about.
There are some folks who talk to me and they say, you know, they've been getting something on the order of $1 million or $1.5 million a year. The Stronach company has been getting this money from the state, and they've been putting it all into Laurel. They,
right.
haven't spent
true.
Any of it at Pimlico.
Well, to be fair, they get some matching money from the state, but they put a lot of their own money. But yes, they have, because that is their centerpiece, their crown piece. That's where their business is. And I should say that, you know, they talked about the horse industry. Maryland's horse industry is very healthy at the moment. There's possible Breeders' Cup, which is a big international thing, coming to Laurel. Fairhill is maybe going to get a bid to do a sort of eventing contest there. International people coming from all over. So the Maryland horse industry is strong, and a lot of it is from the slots.
And, of course, that wasn't always the case even just a few years ago. Let's go back to the phones. Trina in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Delegate Sandy Rosenberg and Karen Hostler. Hi, Trina. What's on your mind? Can you hear me? All right. We have lost Trina. Delegate Rosenberg, I mean, it seems to me that if there is this law on the books, the owners of these racetracks don't have a whole lot of leverage. I mean, what are they going to do? They are legally not allowed to move the Preakness from Pimlico. And so even if they didn't put another dime in it, even if they never fixed the plumbing again, and we've had some famous plumbing problems up there at the racetrack, I mean, they would have to run. If Pimlico became this dilapidated, you know, eyesore times 10, even worse than it is now, they would have no choice, right, but to run the race at that racetrack.
That is correct. But
Or not at all.
Well, no. Look, everybody wants the Preakness to be run, and the question is it going to be run at Pimlico, or is it going to be run, as Charlie Ekman would say, at lovely Laurel? And the track has said, they've consistently said, they no longer want to stop kicking the can down the road. So they want a decision to be made, and the best way for that, there are two ways for that, to bring that about. One, get the study underway by the Stadium Authority and completed in December, as was promised, so that we can make a decision in next year's session, or, because it's not one or the other, have the parties sit down informally and talk about what works, what numbers work for each side, and what numbers work for the racing community and the neighboring communities, so that we can solve the problem.
Delegate Sandy Rosenberg, he's on the phone with us. Karen Hostler here in Studio A. You're listening to Midday. We're talking about the future of Pimlico. I'm Tom Hall, and I'm told that Trina is back with us from Baltimore. Trina, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Just have a couple of comments. The first is, you know, Baltimoreans are all for any type of redevelopment that has a positive impact on the community. And I think what we need to do in looking forward is look at the difference in the different kinds of redevelopment. So you have Preakness and Pimlico is basically a redevelopment project for entertainment. Okay? And then you have State Center, that's a redevelopment project for something more permanent that has a more sustainable impact on the community.
Which is stalled as we speak.
Absolutely. And Delegate Kurt Anderson said just the other day, he went over very clearly the differences between a redevelopment project like Pimlico and a redevelopment project like State Center. So we know that Pimlico may be asking for public dollars to help redevelop that area or to help improvement. And then you have State Center that is not asking for any public dollars. It's all private dollars. So my question is, why is the governor supporting Pimlico and not State Center?
Well, Delegate Rosenberg, you're by no means a spokesman for Governor Hogan, but and I think, Trina, that there is a public partner, public-private partnership that is a dimension of the State Center development. So I don't think the state is off the hook completely when it comes to investment in that project. But, you know, there is a feeling among some that, you know, the governor nixed the red line. He has stalled State Center. If Pimlico were also to be stalled, this building narrative that the governor had some hostility to the city of Baltimore would continue to grow. What do you think of that, Delegate?
Well, I was very disappointed in the governor's decision regarding the red line. It was part of it was going to go through part of my district in the Edmondson Village community. I support the State Center project. It can be tinkered with, but we owe those communities and we owe the state workers a much better facility and entire layout, not just for the state office buildings, but that was going to be a grand redevelopment of several communities, and we can do the Preakness and Pimlico at the same time.
Karen Hostler, what kind of leverage do the owners of Pimlico and Laurel have? I mean, the Stronach Corporation, this is a billionaire family from Ontario, Canada, long connections to the horse racing industry. But in terms of their getting their way, in terms of their increasing their profitability, and in terms of having the kind of race they want to have when it comes to the Preakness, at the end of the day, what kind of leverage do they have?
Well, they own it. They own the tracks. They own it's all theirs. The Preakness, maybe it can't be run in Laurel, but I mean, actually, Sal Sinatra, the Jockey Club president, said to me, you know, are we going to just give up the Preakness? We Maryland, we Baltimore, because we can't come to terms. I mean, the sad fact is that the place is really falling apart. I mean, just being there today, being reminded of, I mean, the toilets, the doors, the lot. There's lot. I mean, just it's clean, but it's just decrepit, and it's going to be dangerous to some degree. So the combined pressure, I think, from many fronts has to get all these folks together.
Well, Delegate Rosenberg, that's all the time we have, and I know you're squeezing us in a very busy day. I appreciate your time today, and we look forward to keeping up with you as this story continues to unfold. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And Karen Hostler, always good to see you. Thank you so much, and enjoy the race.
Oh, I will.
41st District Delegate Sandy Rosenberg represents Park Heights and other areas of Baltimore City in the Maryland General Assembly. WIPR's Karen Hostler has covered the racing industry for a long, long time. The Preakness is on Saturday. If you've got plans to drive along the JFX or Northern Parkway or elsewhere in the vicinity of the track, you should check road closures and detours before you leave. Once again, NBC will cover the race. Their coverage begins at 5 o'clock. Post time is usually around 6:45 Saturday evening. There's an event tomorrow afternoon as part of Preakness Week called the Girls Galleria. You can shop till you drop, and proceeds will benefit the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance in Comen, Maryland. We've got links to information at wypr.org/midday. By the way, yesterday I told you we would be speaking today with Tressie McMillan Cottom, the author of a new book about for-profit colleges. We will be having that conversation at a later date. Coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. Scott Shane from the New York Times, conservative columnist Richard Cross, and tech reporter Stephen Babcock will join me to put this week's dizzying array of developments into context. We also hope to speak with Wesley Lowry from the Washington Post. That's the Midday News Wrap coming up tomorrow at noon. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us today. There's more ahead coming up after a break. Theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with a review of a gospel musical at Arena Players here in Baltimore. Stay with us.